I know many of you are discouraged, but I want to tell you that there is hope. There is hope, and it comes from the young. Not from the young who've been broken by their teachers and universities to the yoke of the woke. Capitulation is not virtue. But the other day at the University of Chicago, a Daily Obama media mouthpiece, David Axelrod's Center for Politics, a few brilliant young people from the Chicago Thinker challenged the media establishment. They didn't shout the speakers down as the hard left does. Instead, these young libertarians and conservatives asked clear, respectful questions, but pointed questions, of the media elite who've been lying to them for years. And these elite in the media, from The Atlantic's Ann Applebaum to CNN's Brian Stelter and others, had a meltdown. Yes, the media establishment is fragile. And all it took was a push by young writers at Chicago Thinker to see the cracks in the mind palace.
Amazing. Thank you. Thank you for doing this. Really appreciate it. I'm Daniel Schmidt. I'm a freshman at the University of Chicago. My question is for Ms. Applebaum. So in 2020, you wrote, "Those who live outside the Fox News bubble do not, of course, need to learn any of the stuff about Hunter Biden," referring to his laptop, of course. A poll later after that found that if voters knew about the content of the laptop, 16% of Joe Biden voters would have acted differently. Now, of course, we know a few weeks ago, the New York Times confirmed that the content is real. Do you think the media acted inappropriately when they instantly dismissed Hunter Biden's laptop as Russian disinformation? And what can we learn from that in ensuring that what we label as disinformation is truly disinformation and not reality?
My problem with Hunter Biden's laptop is, I think, totally irrelevant. I mean, it's not whether it's disinformation or, I mean, I don't think the Hunter Biden's business relationships have anything to do with who should be president of the United States. So I don't find it to be interesting. I mean, that would be my problem with that as a major news story.
We're going to talk about more of this tomorrow in our first panel, so stand by. And I think we have run out of time.
As I said, capitulation is not virtue. And if you're from Chicago, you know this to be true. Kneeling to the boss, kneeling to the machine, no matter if that machine is old-time Democrats or new socialist Democrats, that's not virtue. Kneeling is not about virtue. And one politician who isn't capitulating to Mayor Phallus Maximus is here with us today. He's Raymond Lopez. Ray understands dogs barking in the middle of a conversation. Yes, it's Raymond Lopez of the 15th Ward who came out to challenge her re-election if she ever runs. Others will get into the race. And the more the merrier as far as Mayor Phallus Maximus is concerned. So excited is she that the other day with her wife, she visited the Wiener Circle for hot dogs. Yeah, that's the hot dog stand celebrated for dogs and insults from the staff. And one staffer, putting hot dog in bun, seized upon the mayor's boasts about her, well, as you know it to be, or have heard it to be, alleged, her Phallus Maximus.
This hot bitch, let's look at Lori, hot bitch. What you about? Come on, because you better right, because I will f*** her death. Now, I'ma have, she got a big dick, all right. What's up, Lori? What you about? What's up? You f*** me today?
Now, we'll ask Ray Lopez about this and other matters, too. Jeff Carlin, executive producer of WGN Radio, my friend and co-host, is here. And I'm John Cass, lonely conservative, trying to survive, floating as I am on a cookie, a sugar cookie, in Chicago's sea of liberal media milk. Now I'm columnist and executive editor at your favorite website, johncassnews.com. And where are you with the Chicago Thinker bedeviling the cynical media hacks and Ray Lopez bedeviling Mayor Phallus Maximus? You're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago way.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
So as promised, we have Ray Lopez, alderman of the 15th Ward, who's running for mayor, the first candidate to be announced, to announce himself. Welcome to the Chicago, Ray. Once again, Ray Lopez.
Thank you, John. Jeff, it's great to be back on this, on my favorite podcast in Chicago.
Love you, man.
Good to have you. Very good to have you. So how's it feel to be officially a candidate?
Well, it's been very busy the past several days since Wednesday's announcement. I've been speaking with every reporter, every outlet, anyone who wants to hear the reason why I'm running and why I believe in our great city here. And at some point, I think it's really going to hit me. But right now, I'm just going through the motions, getting the word out, and still very much excited and not regretting my decision to throw my hat in the ring.
Well, let's talk about that, Ray, because first we have to talk about Mayor Felis Maximus going to the Wiener Circle. You heard about this. Are you going to go to the Wiener Circle and be insulted as she was? She laughed about it. Apparently her wife didn't like it, but she did.
I mean, come on, John, who doesn't love a good hot dog? and if I really wanted a better hot dog, I'd just go to the fifth floor and talk to that one. But
so on your lapel, you have a interesting lapel pin, one that I love. It was on a T-shirt once years ago. Coppers made it for me. It was the mascot for the 2016 Olympics that then Mayor Daley was pushing. It is chalky, the outline of the dead body. And there have been so many chalkies in Chicago, particularly of young people over the past couple of years, with murders increasing. Why chalky on your lapel, Ray?
I like chalky because it's a reminder of what is important and what it is that we're fighting for and who we are fighting against. You know, so oftentimes the lapel pin is meant to be a symbol of something that you stand for or something you're trying to raise awareness of. And my entire aldermanic career, fighting for victims and fighting against those committed to being urban terrorists in our communities, is something that I have been a strong champion in trying to raise the awareness of. Too often, people pander. They say, you know, oh, we're going to stop crime. Oh, we're going to, you know, address the issues, as they're literally walking over bodies to get to their jobs. I believe that as mayor, violence has to be the number one issue that I take ownership of. And I will take ownership of, as I said Wednesday, I will take personal responsibility for everyone's safety in the city of Chicago. Because there will no longer be just these fake accountability Tuesdays or these, you know, crocodile tears at press conferences about what's going on in our streets. I've seen and lived it firsthand. You know this, what I've gone up against gangbangers. And it's not until you have a political leader who actually takes ownership for it and says enough, will you ever be able to change the culture in our neighborhoods. And I think it's important when people see that chalky on my lapel that they know that I know that behind every story, there's a victim. There's a family that's in grief, and there's a community that struggles with the aftermath, as well as those damaged youth that are being recruited every day in fifth and sixth grade to be the next generation of gang shooters in our city. So I will never lose sight of it. And having that on my shoulder hopefully helps those in front of me never lose sight of it either.
It's going to be it's going to be an interesting race, Ray. I mean, we've seen a lot of stuff come down to in polling recently that, you know, violence is a tough one, and violence is the one thing that is always on the top of mind and people worry about. And you've even said that here, that, you know, how we control, or we not control, but we tamp down and manage that, is really going to be the biggest selling point and probably one of the biggest losing points for Mayor Lightfoot. What do you see as being one of the first things you want to do about to fix the problems that we have with the violence facing our city?
First, you have to have a leader who understands the department, understands the city, and understands Chicago's neighborhoods. That's why when I was asked, I said the first thing that we have to do is to get rid of David Brown. He has been a failure. He is just a puppet. And he is crazy selling on behalf of crazy right now. That is unacceptable for our police department, because our brave men and women do not feel that they are supported from the top down. And as mayor, it will be incumbent upon me to set the tone for how we deal with crime and violence in the city of Chicago. I can't ask our police officers to go out and do things to protect the citizens if they do not feel that their mayor has their back, if they feel that the mayor is going to throw them under the bus for even the littlest of mistakes. We can correct mistakes and we can hold people accountable for mistakes, but you have to understand people are human and they are working through that, particularly following this administration. Additionally, you have to stop the mass exodus of officers in this department. Right now, nobody wants to work for this department, let alone apply to replace those that are leaving. So we'll have to have a discussion about what we can do to entice and incentivize people to want to work for the city of Chicago, particularly in the police department, but across all our departments, which are struggling right now.
Ray, one of the things the mayor did that lost many of us, including me, besides her capitulation to the Black Lives Matter rioters downtown and in the neighborhoods, that was one. And the second was her subsequent endorsement of Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox, who's the creature of Tony Preckwinkle. Can a mayor affect change and improve the safety of people in Chicago and in Chicago? If Kim Fox's state's attorney releasing people or putting them on bail, and the judges keep putting people on bail and they go out and commit further violence while they're waiting trial, and as Tony Preckwinkle continues to release people from the jail and shrink the size of the jail population, how does a mayor cope with all that?
Well, we know that the impetus for everything that we see with regards to the crime, violence, and the enablement culture in Chicago and Cook County is a multi-headed monster. It's not just the city of Chicago. It's the courts. It's the state's attorney. It's the politics of enablement that are operating on all different levels. Chicago must first get its own house in order. And we have had very inconsistent messaging. We've done damage internally, such as dismantling the gang unit, dismantling the tactical units that go after those key magnets of violence that allow us to do smart policing as opposed to heavy-handed policing. Those were decisions made on the fifth floor and handed down to 35th in Michigan from the mayor to the superintendent. Those were policies that were city-led. And as mayor, you may not have direct control over the courts or what the state's attorney is going to do, but you absolutely have power and authority over what our police department is going to do, what our community residents are going to do. And it could be something just as simple as bringing back the campaigns when we would have people from the neighborhood go down to court cases, to start encouraging the community to get back involved. Because right now, those individuals, Kim Fox and others, who think that they could just get away with these bad decisions, feel emboldened in part because they think the community is not watching or paying attention. We need to remind them through the mayor's bully pulpit that we are all paying attention. And if we have to start having, you know, campaigns to bring residents and busing them down to these court cases to see how the state's attorney's office is acting, or to see how judges are acting, or to start doing a citywide scorecard for those judges who are making decisions not in our best interest, then we will do it. There's more than one way to skin a cat, John. And I think everything should be on the table to help remind those elected officials that they are responsible to the voters and residents of the city of Chicago.
I like the scorecard idea. I think you need to have a Wrigley, like the big scoreboard on the side that runs all the league scores going on. You need to put a big one of those on the outside of, like, right across from the Daily Center, and just have it running constantly. And think, these are the number of judges who left somebody out, who've gone on to commit a violent crime. Oh, here they are. They're their names. How many do they have? How many of this is? I mean, I think that's absolutely brilliant.
And don't forget, those judges are not appointed for life. It's not a Supreme Court appointment. They run and win, and then they have to get retained 6 years later. Mm-hmm. So if you have somebody who's running for retention who has been overly friendly to the criminal establishment, even when it's clearly not in the best interest of the community, or ignores the community when they show up in mass to demand action, then you put that scorecard on them, and then actively remind people that you don't have to keep these people on the bench.
The Ray, the recently, or like, let's say a few weeks ago, Chief Judge Tim Evans talked about these 16-year-old, 17-year-old gangbangers shooting kids, and said that they're really can't be held responsible because their cerebral cortex has not fully developed, so they really don't know the difference between right and wrong. What do you say to that?
I have no doubt in my mind that some of our youth are not as fully developed as we want them to be, particularly coming out of this pandemic. But how many excuses are we going to come up with for allowing bad behavior in this city and in this county? If they're not developed, then hold their parents accountable. If they're not able to be held liable, then hold the individual who's helped recruit them to do these accountable. And oftentimes, that is exactly why gangbangers and criminals go after the 12-year-olds, the 13-year-olds, the 10-year-olds to do things, because they know that they're going to get unwavering sympathy from the system. Quite frankly, I'm tired of that excuse, because there are parents out there who need to be parents. And if they are unable to be parents, we'll help them to be parents. But if they don't want to be parents and they just want to let their children run loose on the street, then they must be dealt with as if they were running on the street with their children as well.
Ray, just to be clear, did you endorse Kim Fox for re-election?
No.
And I did not. What's your relationship? So you did not endorse her. What is your relationship with Tony Preckwinkle?
We know each other. We serve with each other on the Democratic Party, obviously. That's about it.
So what about Jesse Smollett? Have you ever had dinner with him, hung out with him, maybe done some physical training? No, nothing.
No, I'm too skinny.
So you're not doing any weight training with him so that he could withstand all the MAGA supporters in Streeterville at 2 o'clock in the morning on the coldest day of the year?
No, I don't eat Subway. I don't eat Subway. I'm sorry.
It's the bread, right? You want good bread. Yeah. All right. So where do you take it from here, Ray?
You know, I know that over the next week or so, we're going to see a lot more activity in the mayor's race. I broke the ice, so to speak, last week. My goal now is to shore up support introduce myself to our larger stakeholders while still getting the message out to everyday Chicagoans, particularly those that love the John Cash Show and the Chicago Way.
Jeff Carlin, too. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that just goes without saying that they're here.
Yeah, really, right, of course.
Hey, wait a minute. Now, help Jeff Carlin out here. Maybe you can help us out. What is the Chicago Way, Ray?
There you go.
You know, that is a question that comes up all the time. And I think, the Chicago Way that people remember of the past is that, you had to kind of, either know someone to get something or you had to do something to start making things happen. The old greasing of the palm kind of mentality of politics. But I think there's a different Chicago Way that's out there. I think there's a next generation coming of the Chicago Way. And as you look at a lot of the politics, if you look at a lot of the extreme policies that are out there, I like to view the Chicago Way as just calling BS out wherever it is, whether it's 5 feet or 5 miles from you. Because in Chicago, we can smell that, we can see it, and we refuse to accept it. Chicago is gritty, it is strong, and it is direct. And I think that's going to be the next chapter of the Chicago Way's history in the city of Chicago. Honest, direct action moving forward, because I think we've seen, particularly in politics, a lot of well-polished and healed politicians, very slick in what they say, but really leading us down roads that don't work. Getting Chicago back on track, just with direct, blunt honesty, I think is the Chicago Way of the future.
You have been accused of being part of the old regime in your relationship with people that I know and respect. Bill Lipinski, you came up in the 23rd Ward organization.
Yep.
Bill Lipinski, and Ed Burke is your neighbor. What do you say to the media that attack you for being part of the old regime?
Everyone has to get their start somewhere. And I got my start where I grew up. And I grew up in the 23rd Ward. I'm glad that I was able to learn politics, retail ward politics at that level, from people who were known and for delivering service and getting out the vote. But politics changes. It evolves. You don't have precinct captains 2 in a precinct anymore. Twitter is your precinct captain now. You have to be able to evolve with the times. And I think I'm rooted in history and in the basics of politics, but I've evolved, as have the people of Chicago, to 21st century. And I will put up my commitment towards delivering for my residents against anyone's any day of the week. And that is because of what I've learned from those gentlemen when I was younger.
What do you think is going to be? Go ahead, Jen. No, it's good.
No fighting.
We're fighting. You're right that you're correct, because I had to use my cell phone because my computer's out. So the old regime may have been, and I'm talking about old, from the Dailies and all the others, and Burke is under indictment and others. People may have accepted grudgingly corruption, but they don't accept violence. They don't accept their kids being shot. And I think that's what the polls tell us, that violence is the number one issue in Chicago. Yep. They don't have confidence in the mayor or in police superintendent Brown.
Yeah.
And I think it's changing, and it's evolving that way too.
No, without question, but safety and violence is number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 on the polls. It's the number one all-consuming issue. And really, when you look at all the big ticket items that we have to address moving forward, how do we save our economy? How do we deliver service? How do we re-energize the city of Chicago? You can't do any of that until you address whether or not people feel safe sitting in their living rooms or going out front to water their lawn or to the gas station down the street. Nobody feels safe in the city of Chicago right now. Nobody feels safe coming to the city of Chicago. And though the mayor thinks that it's disparaging of me to say that, it's the truth. And you're not going to fix it unless you start speaking from a point of truth. We can pretend everything's fine, but there's a reason why Greektown restaurants close at 8:30 at night now every day of the week. Yeah. There's a reason why there's nobody on the Magnificent Mile and why the owners of Water Tower Place want to turn their keys over and walk away from a multi-million dollar property in the crown jewel of the city of Chicago. It's not working. And until we get that under control, and until people have faith that we're even trying to get that under control, we're going to continue to see the decline of the greatest city in America. And I, for one, refuse to allow that to happen. And I would just say, too, what I find incredible, John and Jeff, is that whenever I talk about this, I'm immediately labeled, oh, well, you know, he's just ultra conservative pandering to the law and order crowd. Since when is being safe pandering to law and order? People want to be safe in Austin. Look at that poor gentleman who was trying to open up a clothing shop in his own neighborhood on the west side and is now leaving because of the fact that he was, you know, not only vandalized, but looted not once, but twice. His dream in his own neighborhood is now shattered and dead because we failed him. Whether you're in Roseland, Back of the Yards, Wrigleyville, where people are being shot on their way to their work, this is not a conservative issue. This is a Chicago issue. And there's not a single neighborhood that's safe in the city of Chicago, except for maybe Fort Laurie. She's got 200 officers surrounding her house.
Are you gonna on the Chicago Way, are you gonna vow not to have 100 officers protecting you? You need 100 officers to protect you? When I've seen you personally with my own eyes walk up to gangbangers who had, you know, been killing people in your neighborhood,
trying to kill
calling them out. Yeah. And you didn't have a gun. You were like sheriff without a gun, like Andy Taylor of Mayberry, but, you know, on the southwest side.
Well, thank you. Well, first off, thank you for not calling me Barney Fife.
I would not.
But yes, no, I don't need 100 people. And I think I don't even think I would need 50, to be honest with you. No mayor has ever had that many. And I think part of that is because I'm not afraid of my residents the way she is. I don't need to live in a bubble. I like being around people. And I think that if you inspire people to do better, then that will resonate with people and they will be coming up to you to thank you and not insult you.
Ray, a lot's been made about the idea that, you know, that you're openly gay and that's going to be a huge win for you, or it could be a big support. How do you take that stuff? Because I've always been curious about that. I hate when people label me or label, and I don't get labeled much because I'm pretty milquetoast, but people get labeled and then there's like this expectation and, or there's this feeling that you have to live up to some sort of standard or whatever. How do you feel about that?
You know, there have been more labels thrown at me over the last 5 days about what I could be, or, you know, the history of what I will be, I should say. The only adjective or label that I want to be known as is that I'm a Chicagoan. The first Chicagoan as mayor in quite some time, especially following this one. I was born and raised in this city. I'm a Chicago as a square cut of pizza. I prefer that.
No,
and I understand.
Yeah.
And I understand there's history here. Mm-hmm. But there was history when I was elected the first time as alderman. There's history when I was elected as Democratic committeeman. All I know is that means I have to be more cognizant of how I act and how I am going about things so that I don't ruin it for everyone after me. If you're not aware of your place in history, at least just aware of it, you take it for granted. And I think we've seen that in this administration. And I think it's going to make it harder for those to follow in her footsteps. But that label or any label doesn't define me. The issues define me. My passions define me and my convictions define me. And I think that resonates more than any other label or adjective.
The labeling of you as the first openly gay male candidate is rather precious. I think it has nothing to do with the issues or your ability to govern. Question, though, on policy. Without education, there is no future for the city. How do you see education, public education? Lori Lightfoot has presided over the shrinking mayoralty. It got tinier and tinier to the point where it had little, if any, reach in Springfield, allowing for the election of the public school board in Chicago, which in my mind will be dominated by the Chicago Teachers Union. Where do you come down on that?
Well, two things, John. First off, let me respond to the shrinking mayoralty. And yes, that is definitely something that we've witnessed in our lifetime. The mistake that this administration made was that the feeling that that chair and desk on the fifth floor somehow carried with it the weight and heft of ultimate power. And it does not. Relationships with people are what make that office powerful. Rahm Emanuel had relationships. Richard M. absolutely had relationships. Harold Washington had relationships. All of those powerful mayors had relationships to which Lori Lightfoot chucked them all into the lake. And we've seen the impact that that has had, not only on her office, but more importantly on the city as a whole. Yeah. And you are absolutely correct. Nobody in Springfield gives two rat's behinds about the city of Chicago now. That is a marked turn from where the city used to be as the dominant force hundreds of miles away in Springfield. As mayor, I know that relationships matter, and there's going to be a lot of work to restore and rebuild those relationships, particularly in Springfield, where there is none now, because we cannot have Springfield making decisions for Chicago with zero input from the city itself. Now, we have to contend with the Board of Education, with CPS becoming a fully elected school board. As mayor, disaster. I have to help that transition because it will be 2 years in after I'm elected. So I know that there's a limited window to kind of help right the ship before the Democratic takeover of it. But we have some serious questions out there as to how are we educating our children? Are we educating our children? And are taxpayers getting what they pay for when the cost of educating a child in CPS is equal to what some people pay for college tuition at Purdue? Are we getting what our money's paying for? And I think those are some serious conversations that need to be had. You know, CTU and I have not always seen eye to eye, but I have to say that we can't keep letting personalities get in the way of progress. And if that means I have to sit down with them and hit the reset button with them as well, then we'll do it, because there are too many big issues that have been kicked to the wayside by this administration because of personality conflicts. And the only people that have suffered is Chicago. And absolutely the ones who have suffered the most during this pandemic are the children of Chicago, many of whom have fallen through the cracks, many of whom are now in their second going on third year, falling behind and are just being socially promoted upward. We have failed our children, and we need to correct that if we expect them to have any hope of being productive members of society and not just being the next article in the crime section.
One of the ways to do that, I think, is to push for complete and total school choice, especially for Black and Latino families who are trapped in a system that really doesn't care for them. Where are you on school choice, Ray?
You know, I'm open to the conversation. Clearly, I was a product of the Catholic school system, so I understand. I understand that. But I think options are never a bad thing because they allow for competition. But I definitely want to make sure that this is not something that we just jump into blindly and that we can do this in a way that makes sense. But also keeping in mind that the school system as a whole is going to change dramatically in 2 years with the election of an elected school board. And what I don't want to see is decisions being made within 2 years and complete turmoil and reversals after, once the Board of Education becomes its own independent governmental unit. I think there are issues, more of financial constraints that are coming down that we have to address as well when it comes to the city of Chicago now having to face what otherwise was used to be called a sister agency, now being an elected body running parallel to it.
To me, that's a disaster. But here's another one, and you brought it up. You talked early on, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, about relaxing or eliminating the residency rule for city employees so that city employees can live outside the city. Many, even conservative thinkers, believe that such a radical change would mean that every cop leaves the city overnight and every fireman. And then neighborhoods like Mount Greenwood and on the north side, you know, near Jefferson Park, elsewhere, all empty out overnight. And that might bring rapid and real change to the city. How do you rationalize or justify the residency rule requirement that you've talked about?
Well, we have to incentivize people to stay. We have to incentivize our workers, particularly those in law enforcement, not to leave. And I think being able to give options to those employees that are in good standing, who have put in the time, is not a bad part of the conversation to include. I don't agree that you're going to see a mass exodus of people to the suburbs for a couple reasons. One, if we are all on the same page and if we are all working to save Chicago, why would anyone leave? And as a mayor that will inspire people to believe in their city again and love their city again, I am hard pressed to say that an option is a bad thing and that people are going to jump on it when the city is in its renaissance. Two, I know that this has been a conversation that has long been ignored by the fifth floor. So there's no harm in having a conversation about this and seeing what the pros and cons are. And three, to be honest, John, and you know this, the property taxes and the taxes that people complain about in the city of Chicago pale in comparison to our suburban neighbors. Simply, yep, because we have a broader depth of a tax base in the city of Chicago, so that our property taxes are not nearly as high as they are in some of the surrounding suburbs. So this notion that I'm going to leave because I don't like this city and go somewhere else and pay five times the property taxes because I'm not in Chicago anymore is really a false argument, particularly when there's so much more to be offered in the city of Chicago. The problem is that we have to show people what is being offered and why it is better to be in the city, even in spite of having an option to leave. And we can do that. We'll do that.
So what is your position on residency, then? What clearly stated? What is it?
I am open to the discussion on whether or not our employees have to live here. I am happy to entertain that part of the discussion and dialogue. And conversely, if people have that option, I'm also open to giving them bonuses for staying. Because we oftentimes train and have a lot of quality employees who are choosing to leave simply because they do not feel valued by their own government. And we will convince them and entice them to sign on, to stay, and to continue to work for the citizens of the city of Chicago.
Oof. I know one thing that bugs most of the city's citizens of Chicago, Ray, are the streets. And I ask everyone who runs, potholes, right?
Potholes.
There's got to be like some outside engineering and like analysis firm that could come in and tell us what's wrong with our streets. Because
I mean, I could tell you right now what's wrong with our streets. We pay way too much for a product that's way under grade from what we need in the city of Chicago. And this is not a secret. We know this, and I think we need a complete reevaluation of our processes, particularly at CDOT, to address our infrastructure. Yeah. I'll give you a perfect example of how what we pay is out of tune and out of touch with the product that our residents are getting. In my ward, we were replacing alley aprons, you know, the mouth of the alley.
Mm-hmm.
We were going from asphalt to cement because it's a better entrance and a cleaner entrance for alleys. And while we were in the midst of pouring cement, a private waste hauler drove right through my alley apron. Wet alley apron. Thankfully, their insurance said, okay, well, we'll fix it. I mean, it wasn't a big argument. Sure. So they were like, well, or we could just write the check to CDOT. And CDOT said, well, we'll take the check and we'll do it. CDOT told them what it cost me to put that alley apron in, and the hauler balked and said, why are you paying so much money? That's double what it costs. Because for private installation of that same alley was over 50% cheaper.
Oh.
Our pricing is wrong in the city of Chicago, and we have no accounting for why it costs us, you know, $20,000 for an alley apron, or why it costs us $130,000 for one block of enhanced lighting, or why it costs us $70,000 to re-asphalt a street. There's no accounting for that. And there's no consistency.
Well, Ray, into an area where it's dangerous, Ray. The guys who pour asphalt in Chicago are the kings of Chicago. You know this.
There is more than enough work to go around that we don't have to overbill just for the limited streets that we do. And oftentimes we know that the work that we do, it's not even up to par in most neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And more importantly, the restoration that comes after it, that's even been something that I've introduced laws and got passed with Lori Lightfoot so that we have consistent restoration in the city of Chicago. These are general neighborhood things that a mayor needs to be aware of. And it's been a long time since Chicago had a mayor that actually cared about the neighborhood city service delivery aspects. Because you're right, Jeff. People care about potholes. They care about whether or not they see rats running around when they throw out their garbage. They care whether or not they have lights working on their block. And Chicagoans pay their taxes with the expectation that city services are being delivered to them. And if they're not being delivered and they're not being address quickly, they're going to be angry. They're going to be upset, and rightfully so.
And one thing that kills me too, Ray, is that I see it all the time that there'll be a corner in our neighborhood being torn up to replace someone's water main or whatever. And then they pave over and the whole intersection gets repaved. And within 2 weeks, some other crew's out there digging in the middle of it to do some other work that was just neat, nightly, tightly done, and now it's being redone. There's no coordination there either. So you've got my full support if you can fix our streets, Ray.
Well, I've been solely focused on city services, Alderman. I've been working to explain it to my residents so they understand how much it costs when you call to have something done, so they can understand the value of their tax dollars being spent on their neighborhoods, on their requests. And that's something that we're going to continue once I'm on the fifth floor. Because most of the time, people don't understand exactly how much it costs to have that garbage can replaced, how much it costs to fix those lights, And you have to educate people so they understand it, because if they don't understand it, any amount that you ask them to pay is too much, because they think it just magically happens somehow else.
Jeff, I'm concerned that you're putting Ray in jeopardy here and Ray himself in jeopardy. I remember when Barack Obama, when he was hanging out with Tony Rezko and pretending to be a reformer, called me up at the paper saying, "Hey, Brother Cass, what do you want in my ethics legislation?" And I said, you know, I said, first cut the bleep, and then said, "All right, you want something? All right, put this in your ethics legislation. Every pound of asphalt, every ton of asphalt, every bit of bag of concrete will be tracked throughout the system, so people can see what the cost turns out to be." And he said, "Yeah, I'll get back to you right away on that." And I never heard from him again until he was president of the United States. So I don't want Ray Lopez is mayor, I don't want Ray to be invited to Chinatown for spaghetti dinner at midnight, if you know what I mean.
Yes, well, we don't want that.
And if someone tells you they'll send a car for you, don't go, Ray. Please, okay?
Understood.
You have a family, you know? But politics being what it is, others are jumping in. I see Mike Quigley, who, you know, up until recently in my mind had his head sticking out of Bernie Hansen's back pocket like a baby kangaroo, is thinking about running. And, Paul Vallis is thinking about running. How are you going to deal with all these candidates who are going to be pushing? I guess Cam Buckner, the state's attorney? I mean,
Buckner.
Cam Buckner. Buckner has suffered the astonishment of being pulled over for a DUI, so I don't know whether that's a good benchmark to begin a campaign, but others will run. How are you going to handle all this, Ray? You need money.
My goal
is the money.
My goal is just to focus on fundraising. I'm not delusional in thinking that I could just do this based on good looks alone. I know it's going to be at least $10 million, and I'm disciplined enough to work to make that happen. No one's going to outwork me, and I'm undeterred on whether or not there's two candidates or 12 candidates in this race. More than likely, there will be a runoff. It's just statistically almost an impossibility when you have 10 or more candidates to avoid a runoff. Because even if they get 2 or 3% each, that adds up and takes away from the top two trying to get 50% plus one vote. I get that. It's just the reality we find ourselves in. And clearly having that many opponents, I think speaks volumes to the anger and frustration the current mayor has generated in the communities of Chicago. But this is an election, and I've been through two municipal and three partisan elections in my career. I know what it means to have to get down, roll up my sleeves. It's not something that bothers me. We will do it. I will do it with the help of communities all across the city, and we're going to get the job done, period.
What does it tell you that the mayor of Chicago is having difficulty raising money? I don't think she has any, really. Does she have any?
Most of her money is coming from is coming from out of state. Most of her competition is clearly not happy, and I think the fact that overwhelmingly the citizens and voters of Chicago have already decided what her fate is going to be tells me she has a larger uphill battle than I do as alderman making the leap.
It's certainly it's a challenge, and the money thing makes me nervous, because for everybody, just because I hate, John and I talk about this all the time, it just costs too much to run for anything. And I don't like what we get when we pay that much for it. One of the costs, though, is tied to communications. And Ray, I got to ask you, if you do become, you know, mayor, you're notorious in media circles to be very reachable. And, you know, good. Every producer I know who reaches out gets a response. And is that something you're going to maintain? Are you going to try to keep close to the front of communications? Because our last two mayors have had a massive machinations for their communications program. And I don't trust them. I don't trust anybody who hides behind that much stuff.
No, I think Chicago likes having a mayor that's accessible, and the press need to be accessible to that mayor. This mayor clearly has shown her contempt for the free press, trying to dictate who, what, when, and where. Rahm Emanuel loved having choreographed press conferences and things of that nature. But I think as mayor, being able to just have a free and open weekly press conference, a press availability is a good thing. Questions are going to follow you no matter what. And too often politicians of all levels try to only answer the ones that they feel comfortable with. But that doesn't make the stories go away. You have to answer people's questions, and you owe it to them to answer their questions. So I intend to be as accessible as I have been.
So a weekly press conference from Mayor Ray Lopez sounds interesting. I would only want you to announce at halfway through your term that you will only speak to either Greek journalists or ginger journalists
named Jeff.
That's Jeff, who may become physics teachers. But and restrict it that way. I hope you do that, because you know there's nothing like a mayor choosing immutable characteristics.
John, it's interesting you bring that up, because actually I was on a left leaning radio show, and I was asked why I go on conservative leaning shows and programs, and I said. And it was told to me that, you know, I shouldn't really be appearing on certain shows. I told the host, and this is before this podcast, so I can't wait to see what they're going to say about this podcast. But I was told that, you know, I should be more discerning, to which I said, I'm not going to be in the habit of discriminating as to which journalists I speak to. That is a tradition we can end right now, because I believe ideology of the show should not matter, because I'm presenting a case about my campaign and my love for my city on any platform that will take me. If Fox News takes me, so be it. The problem isn't that I go on Fox, in my opinion. The problem is, why is CNN and MSNBC not inviting me to their shows? Because if they did, I'd show up on their programs too. And I think that often gets lost in this question about, you know, where and why I'm talking to people. I'll talk to everybody. I'll talk to the local newspaper reporter just as quickly as I talk to the Tribune reporter, because I think reporters
are
the answer.
Yeah, you want, you know what Michael Jordan said? Republicans buy shoes too, which is something that I think people forget. You know, there are many, when we talk about diversity, if you're just talking about skin color and gender, you're a loser. We're talking about diversity of thought. And there's a lot of thought, a lot of different opinions in Chicago, and you're trying to reach them all. So what's wrong with that? I don't see anything wrong with that. Do you, Jeff?
No, absolutely not. The Chicago way knows no creed.
That's right. Because it used to be a bunch of pink guys dominating the Chicago way, and then it became minorities dominating the Chicago way, and it's still the Chicago way, as far as I'm concerned. But Ray, one question of many. Lori Lightfoot is going to try to put Ed Burke around your neck. He's under indictment. Who knows whenever that will come to trial. The same way that she put Ed Burke around Tony Preckwinkle's neck. How do you plan to deal with it?
Lightfoot has been trying to put Ed Burke, the boogeyman, as against me for 3 years. And it hasn't stuck. I remind people often that when I first ran in 2015 and won, Ed Burke had an opponent against me. He tried to defeat me. And if it's wrong for me to work with my neighboring alderman on shared community interests and things of the like, then I don't understand what she thinks the role of an alderman is and how she believes that aldermen address issues in a community. Because clearly she doesn't understand that dynamic, which we know. I am my own man. And it's outrageous that for 3 years, Lori Lightfoot has tried to insist that I am too stupid to be of my own mind, make my own decisions, and more importantly, run circles around her, the highly educated, high power lawyer turned mayor. It is possible for a kid from the Southwest side to think on his own. I do it every day, and I will do it as mayor of the city of Chicago.
Yeah, I think she's making a big mistake, but she's never understood the city. And when she was on the Chicago Way a while back when I was defending her, she asked Jeff and I for a list of books that people could read in her administration to understand Chicago politics. And I thought, really, if you don't understand Chicago politics, what the hell are you doing running for mayor? You know, what are you doing in the business? What are your thoughts? Do you need a list of books to understand how things work here?
I think Ray understands the Chicago way better than anybody.
You know, going back to the Lipinski days and all that, I understand politics just fine. I understand Chicago just fine because I was born and raised here, unlike our current mayor. I understand and don't need a book to tell me you don't put ketchup on a hot dog, that you have to have your Italian beefs baptized and also with jardinier. I understand that. And I understand what's really the concerns of the people living in neighborhoods like those that I've represented who just want to be safe, who just want to be taken care of. There's no learning curve for me the way there was for Lori Lightfoot, who's still on the upward learning curve, although she's not been paying attention. We can handle our issues in this city. I know we can, and we will. Once you have a mayor who loves every corner of this city as much as I do, once you have a mayor who is not afraid to tackle those issues, to call out the bad actors, and to start from a place of truth, that's what I bring to this table. That's something that's been lacking, and that is something that gravitates people to this campaign. The genuineness that is Raymond Lopez.
Yeah, I think the fake superiority thing may play in some quarters among people who are not from here. You know, I'm a lawyer from Mayor Brown, and you were a skycap at the airport, and so what are you talking to me about? That kind of thing. But I don't think it plays with the neighborhoods, Ray, because in the neighborhoods, when I was in the neighborhoods, you know, and I'm born here on the Southwest side, not too far from where you're the alderman. The rule was, it came from Mayor Richard J. Daley. The rule was, don't act big. Don't act big. And I just see a lot of acting big going on, you know, with these folks. And it's not attractive.
No.
To the true Chicago.
Humility is not a weakness. It's a strength. And if you have to be a bully 24/7 to get your point across, you are a failure. Period.
Well, Ray Lopez, good luck to you. I hope that the big question besides residency and school choice will be where you're going to hang out, either Palermo's on 63rd or Palermo's on 95th, which is in Oakland. But if you release residency, you can hang out there too.
63rd Street, without question. Because I've been going there for about 10 years, so I wouldn't change now.
Square cut, square slices. I mean, square cuts, not slices. Ray Lopez, thanks for being here on the Chicago Way with Jeff Carlin and myself.
Yeah, thanks,
man. And you're invited back all the time, and so are other candidates, including the one who sticking out of Bernie Hansen's pocket, and everybody else who may have a DUI or not. If you want to show up, show up. You're more than welcome. But Ray, you had to be the first because you are the first to come out and challenge her. So good luck to you, my friend.
John, Jeff, thank you.
You bet. Thanks, Ray.
Thanks, buddy. Bye. So thanks to Ray Lopez, alderman of the 15th Ward, the first to come out and challenge Mayor Lightfoot, or mayor of Chicago. Talked about residency. Talked about school choice. Talked about pizza. And I just got a feeling about this guy. He's not going to back down. I didn't see him back down with the gangs that he confronted by himself, all by himself, on a hot day in August years ago. And Jeff Carlin, I don't see him backing down now. It should be interesting. So for Alderman Ray Lopez, alderman of the 15th Ward, southwest side of Chicago, and for Jeff Carlin, my dear friend, executive producer at WGN Radio, and for me, John Cass, trying to survive on the sugar cookie that's crumbling in the sea of liberal milk, editor-in-chief of johncassnews.com. Join us next time, won't you, for another visit on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.